kill people, being bombed daily by corporate America, and poisoned thereby by heavy metals. You know, mercury, selenium, you know. On the other side of the planet is Afghanistan. Kill people, being bombed daily by munitions made by corporate America, and toxified by heavy metals. Depleted uranium, lead. Same, same. God Almighty, if I'm an environmentalist, then I have a duty to oppose this. This ramping up of the nightmare in Afghanistan. I have a duty to oppose it. Not a preference. Not a coin toss. Not an, you know, well, if you get the chance, you might want to think about saying something. No! I have a duty. I have something that lies upon my heart and my soul and the core of my integrity to oppose this. Because if I, a part of a community that is assaulted by 3.5 million pounds of high explosives a day, if I can look away from Afghanistan, then the rest of the godforsaken world can look away from me. And mine. And my friends. And we dare not call out to the rest of the country and say, see the plight that is going on in Appalachia. Why should they care? I will not be the second traveler on the road to pass the wounded, beaten man. I will not be. Call me a filthy hippie. Call me a tree hugger. Call me unclean. Call me what you will. But say that when people were under siege, that when human beings' very lives were in the balance, that I at least had the moral courage to stand up and say, God damn it, no! And if you can say that of me, then I can sleep at night. And I can have a clear conscience. So that's my side. To offer you another side, from the internet's most brilliant satirist and all around brilliant man, Eugene Finnerman at FinnermanWorks.com. He dropped me a note letting me know that this was going to post. A little piece called How to Conquer Afghanistan. How can Barack Obama succeed where Sean Connery and Michael Caine failed? Before his impending performance of the man who would be president, Mr. Obama should first consider the successful invasions of Afghanistan. Yes, contrary to the media's incessant references to the graveyard of empires, Afghanistan has been conquered a number of times. The Russians certainly failed. But Afghanistan has succumbed to the Persians, the Greeks, the Mongols, and even the British. And do you think the country became Muslim just through Arab charm? History tells us that there are two different approaches to conquering Afghanistan. The first may be summarized as force and finesse. This strategy concedes that Afghanistan is practically ungovernable, and the best you can do is to tilt the anarchy in your favor. Conquer Kabul. Anyone can do that. And then start negotiating with the various tribes that actually rule the region. In return for acknowledging your titular control, you will ally yourself with one tribe against another. Try picking the most grateful or least treacherous tribe. And that really can be the challenge. This was the Persian approach, and after 3 years of fighting mountain to mountain, Alexander adopted it too. He even married the daughter of a tribal chieftain, that rare instance when politics makes straight bedfellows. Alexander, however, thought that Bactria, as Afghanistan was then known, could use another tribe, a colony of Greeks. Eugene's not kidding. He even built towns for these outposts of Hellenization. The city of Kandahar, as we've noted on this program, originally was named Alexandria. The Greek hold of Bactria lasted some 2 centuries, and their culture pervaded beyond those borders. In northern India, the statues of Buddha looked remarkably like Apollo. The British Empire had no real interest in Afghanistan, as it has been known since the 18th century. But it was an unruly neighbor of India, which the British did dearly covet. So the British thought that a show of force might induce some tranquility among the warring Afghan tribes. In 1839, a British army of 21,000 occupied the major cities of Afghanistan and anointed a pet prince to be the region's emir. There was so little resistance that nearly two-thirds of the army returned to India. However, the British optimism proved premature. Of the 3,600 men stationed in Kabul, one survived the ensuing massacre in 1842. A British army invaded Afghanistan, but only to safely rescue and evacuate the besieged British garrisons in other Afghan cities. Afghanistan returned to a sovereign state of chaos. You can guess the fate of the British-designated emir. Britain was resigned to Afghan anarchy and brigandage, but not an emir who allied himself to the Russians. In 1878, the prospect of Russian encroachment on India led Britain into another Afghan war. A British army of 40,000 invaded the country. The emir conceded to London's demands, and as the British forces were withdrawing, the British embassy staff at Kabul was massacred. It is, after all, an Afghan tradition. Back came the British army, and out went the emir. He would spend the next 43 years in India as a guest of the British. Spot of tea? Oh, really? You can't drink it? What, hanging by your thumbs? Well, blimey. The British replaced him first with his brother and then with an even more compliant cousin. He and his successors reached an understanding with the British. They could expect a generous allowance in pounds sterling. They were free to determine Afghanistan's domestic policies, if any. But they need not bother with a foreign policy. London would make those decisions. This little arrangement lasted until 1919. So President Obama has these precedents in force and finesse. The real challenge in this strategy is picking the right stooge. The second approach to Afghanistan can be expressed as annihilation or else. This was how the Arabs marketed Islam. In the 7th century, religious fanaticism and cavalry made Islam nearly irresistible. Even the desolation of Afghanistan was little hindrance to an army accustomed to the deserts of Arabia. Yeah, when you've come out of the desert of Arabia, everything else looks like a salad bar. It really does. The conquered pagans were presented with a compelling argument for Islam, conversion or death. Since the indigenous theological mix of Zoroastrianism, Hinduism, Buddhism, and animism had not proved much of a protection, the Afghans conceded to the superiority of Allah. Genghis Khan also applied this approach, although he did not offer any theological solace. For a 13th century barbarian, he was a pioneer in mass communication. Genghis offered free samples of massacres and then let word of mouth do the rest. The towns that did not comply with immediate and abject surrender would learn the Mongol hobby of collecting decapitated heads and building them into pyramids. Such recreation perpetuated Mongol rule in Afghanistan for more than 4 centuries. Over time, the Mongols did convert to Islam. Jihads and harems had such a spiritual appeal. Known by the more Arabic pronunciation of Mogul, they overran India and made Islam so very popular there. Annihilation or else was most recently used by the Soviets in Afghanistan. They had the prerequisite ruthlessness for the strategy, but not the necessary budget. War is more expensive than it used to be. The Soviet Union was a fourth-rate economy trying to prop up a world empire. Muhammad and the Quran might inspire threadbare soldiers to conquer. Leonid Brezhnev and imperialism, the highest stage of capitalism, did not incite the same level of heroics. The Soviet soldiers probably were willing to trade their tanks for food. So annihilation or else can be effective when practiced by religious fanatics or sociopaths. But they lost the last election here. You know, the religious fanatics and the sociopaths. Furthermore, the American public certainly would rather commit war crimes against Venezuela, Iran, or France. No, President Obama will choose some variation of force and finesse. Bribes and half measures are, after all, the American way. And now you know the ironic story. How can we know this? How can a brilliant Jeopardy champion sitting in some proximity to Chicago, a smart-ass hillbilly deep in the Appalachians, a southern man in the outliers of Nashville, and everyone else who has written to me about Afghanistan, how can we all know this and Barack Obama not? How is that possible? And, of course, that takes me back to the inquiry that that David made. And that is the either-or, and the either-or is absolutely... you don't want to be either-or. Neither of the things that Barack Obama is, according to David, is anything that any self-respecting human being would want to be. Is he the empty suit, as Kate has said, triangulating and polling his way to that second term by any means necessary? Or has he become a dupe and a stooge of those that love and profit from war? Quick, anybody. Anybody want to be number one? Cold, calculating, cynical, triangulating, polling, anything for personal advancement. Anybody want to be that? Anybody? Bueller? Okay, how about a willing dupe and stooge of multi-billionaire war profiteers? Anybody? Bueller? Anybody? Hello? Is this thing on? No, nobody wants to be that either. There is a third choice. There is most assuredly a third choice. But it seems abundantly clear that Barack Obama will not choose it. That third choice is to be enlightened, humane, practical, decent, and dare I even say it, Christian. And he won't be any of them, because in order to be all that, he would have to stand at West Point this evening and say, guys, here's the skinny. Everybody coming home. Winter has already fallen on the Hindu Kush. The snows are already coming. The bitter winter winds that howl down through the valleys of Afghanistan have already grown their teeth and sharpened them on the rocky ledges of distant mountains. It is time. Tell those whom we love so very much that we remember them, and that remembering them, we will not leave them to an unkind fate in a distant hellhole. It is time to bring them home. Say what you will of me, I care not. Do as you wish. I care not. They're coming home. They're starting now. Can you imagine such a president with the guts to make such a statement? I think even the right wing, who will not, by the way, be appeased by 30,000 more troops, because if Barack Obama sends 30,000, they'll say it should have been 60. If he sends 60, they'll say it should have been 120. If he sends 100, if he sends 500,000 of America's finest young men and women to die in Afghanistan or simply languish there, the right wing will scream that it should have been a million. If we kill one in three Afghan wedding parties, the right wing will want two in three dead. If we kill two in three, they'll want to abolish marriage in Afghanistan. For you see, for all that they talk about being servants of Jesus Christ, the right wing are very plainly worshippers at the altar of Ares, of Mars, of that god so drenched in blood that the very planet that bears his name is red. It's said that in the ancient empire, the legions were most fond of the Mithras cult. And of course, the Mithras cult does bear some resemblance to Christianity in its particulars. And we don't have anybody around to ask exactly what went on at the Mithraic initiation. The initiate stood in a pit and had a live bull slaughtered over him, drenching him in the hot, steaming blood of that bull. And that having been washed in the blood, that soldier was then purified to go forth and do the bloody business of empire. That is the cult of the right wing, the worship of Ares, the worship of Mars. Being washed in the blood of people the world over and called upon periodically to wash others in their own. And it is nothing with which I wish any part. 1:30 the first hour of the program, and we will go straightways to the phone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Oh, listen, you know, I was just sort of, not even like I'm in a serious conversating mood, but I just have to touch base with you on this, because this is, I am just sort of flabbergasted by this shit. This is, I mean, I know we're a country of 300 million people, and that's a lot, okay? But this is, you know, I can't even believe this is happening. This is I don't know. It's unbelievable. I just needed to touch base to someone who can at least appreciate the gravity. You know, I am just so I don't know. I know I sound crazy, but you know, it's just stunning that this fool, sorry, is gonna put out rationale for escalating. I'm like, where the hell am I? What you know, what is this?
Who put the pod under the guy's bed that we elected president?
No, and it's just the whole build-up of the media. The media is so disgusting and despicable, and the West Point setting. I'm like, you know what? We've seen this movie before, and it's not funny because it just rolls on. Like, the 300 million people don't matter. We're out of the show. Exit stage right, I guess.
Oh, we're not, you know... We don't really understand, Sandra. We don't have a real appreciation of the of the global implications
failing to, and
you know, this is the part where, you know, you start speaking in tongues like Lindsey Graham. You know, I had that soundbite from him last night where he said, well, some pretty heavy hitters are going to be watching us to see how we handle this here in Afghanistan.
Oh, no, but it's just, no, this is just, the elite have gone, they're just whacked out. This is just absurd, you know? I mean, I don't know if I made the mistake. I mean, I'm not saying it's a mistake, but I read, what's his name at Salon? Green?
Glenn Greenwald, yeah.
Yeah, and of course, you know, he just makes some devastating comparisons. It's just like, you don't even need to, it's not even like he's being on one side or another. He's just writing, it's just stunning. The whole exercise is really doing my head in. And I'm not at all sure, outside of chatting with you, what the hell to do, you know?
And I don't either. Apparently, we don't matter. The people who elected Barack Obama do not matter, Sandra. Because what I think he's hoping to do is this is supposed to be, and I'm just trying to sort of put my head into the way they think there. This is supposed to be 30,000 human beings, 30,000 mothers, sons, and daughters are supposed to be the centrist path. Granted, it's not the 500,000 that the hardcore right wing would want, or perhaps atomic warfare, I don't know. And it's not, it's not the complete withdrawal that you and I would like to have. So we're just going to send 30,000 because that's centrist.
Well, no, that Orwellian, I hate to keep bringing up, dude, but it's just like, it's this whole administration is becoming just Orwellian, because ain't that fool going to pick up a peace prize?
That would be this week.
What the hell? I mean, come on, you know. I mean, I'm not a huge theater person, but boy, you know.
I know. they could send one of those little emails through the series of tubes to President Obama from Norway and just say, you know, never mind.
Well, no, but it's just, I mean, the whole thing, the speech at West Point, I mean, all of it, come on. You know, it's just...
Oh, and the details are no prettier. You know, last night, David from Tennessee speculated that, you know, maybe he'd say, okay, we're going to surge, and then we're going to get everybody home by July 2010. And with something like that, that we'd kind of have to say, well, you know, that's leaving Afghanistan, and that... But no, everybody's going to be home something like maybe... July of 2011. So he's pinning this on his re-election bid.
Not the midterms
in 2010. No, those people get hung out to dry too. It's not just us; it's them.
Haven't we seen this before, though?
Sadly, yes.
I mean, I know. I'm just, you know, it's like, how do I explain to you? You heard my little nieces in the back of the car at one time, right? Forever giggling.
Yeah, right.
How do I explain? You know, these girls are going to get bigger and bigger, and it's just been a war, all right? That's it. They're like seven. You know what I mean?
Well, exactly. You know, I think...
You know, nothing's going to pay attention to it. You know what I'm saying? But... Yeah.
But someday they'll grow up and they'll get to where Cassie is. You know, she's a high school senior. And she said, you know, Bob, we've been in war almost as long as I've been in school.
Right, you know. And it's just sort of, you know, I got some other little younger boys who are, you know, 12 now. You know what I mean? I'm starting to think, wow, you know, is that what's waiting for these young men, you know what I mean?
Yes. Yes, I do.
And it's because that's the only way I can process it, Bob, is, you know, just looking around at the little ones that, you know, are in my life, right? And I just am like, wow, this is not what I want to be going on in this country. I don't want a country that can't help its people economically and just become this kind of perpetual war. And you know, I know. It's just, I have to say, maybe I'm not clever enough to see what's going on, but this just seems.
No. This is you're plenty clever. And frankly, this kind of triangulation is too cute by half.
Yeah, well, no, and I hate to say it, but Mr. Obama, you are not Bill Clinton. So if he, I don't know how far he thinks he can take the triangulation. You know what I'm saying?
Well, apparently he thinks he can ride it around the block as much as he wants to.
No, but it's just the big problem with what he's doing is that. Yeah, maybe his base won't be enthusiastic. No, his base, I got a lot of books to read. You understand what I'm saying, Bob? I won't, they won't come out. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's...
Yeah, I'm doing my hair.
Whatever. I'm trying to prepare for this class. You know what I'm saying? They will tune out if they can, you know?
Well, see, and that's the other thing. He played hope and change to very great effect, and that did get a lot of kids out. What's the slogan for 2012, Sandra?
Yeah, right. No.
No, I mean for 2012, is it? No, really, the change is going to happen now. That's too wordy.
No, I just think that the face has been revealed, to be honest, because where are you going to hide, really? Where do you hide except to embrace whatever the F you're doing? You know, I can't see the – I don't see how they're going to craft a new slogan. What are they going to say? And that's what scares me. It's like – it looks like it's like tough pity, deal with it. You see what I mean?
Yeah, well, that's what I said. We talked a couple of weeks ago about that 4th of July appearance where George Bush went to Philadelphia and the guy shook his hand in line and said, you're a terrible president. And George looked at him and said, who gives a what you think? Well, this is Barack Obama's who gives up what you think moment.
Right, and it's just sort of,
I mean, is there a little bit, let me ask this, is there a little bit of pity to be had for Barack Obama in this, where where if you could catch him in an unguarded moment, he'd say, listen, have you seen these generals? They'll kill me!
Well, yeah, no, I mean, of course, that could also run through my mind, but on the other hand, the last time I heard, nobody put a gun to his damn head to be president. See,
to make him run. You wanted the job, now do the job.
Cops, no one put a gun to their head to be cops. You know? So I'm sorry, I just, that whole little song and dance is like, dude, you know. But that makes me think that, he's fully embraced it. And if that's the case, I guess that's what we're dealing with now, Bob. And that's the thing that I'm sort of...
It may be, Sandra. And just another place that I went in my weird little way of thinking. Long about January the 20th, 2009, there were a lot of people out there saying things like, Dr. King's dream has finally been fulfilled.
Oh, please. No, I never went that far. Come on now.
No, you didn't, but others did. And the fact of the matter is that turned, I thought about that today, and it just turned to ashes in my mouth.
Well, the most honest thing Obama has ever said was at one of those debates when someone asked, well, what do you think King would blah, blah, blah about him running, and he said, well, King wouldn't be involved in this process at all. He would be in the street. Remember that comment?
Yep.
I was like, well, that's interesting.
And the other thing is Dr. King if in fact it's one of those cases where he's in that private unguarded moment says these crazy ass generals will have me killed, the difference between Barack Obama's and Dr. King knew it.
What?
They're gonna kill me, and he didn't stop, and he didn't say, well, you know what, we're gonna just kind of go and sit down and sit back, and no more lunch counter for a while, and no more sit-ins, and you garbage workers in Memphis, you're just a bunch of, why don't you be quiet and let me just work on this behind the scenes for a little bit?
Right. Oh yeah. No, because you can't even compare the two. That's why any of that kind of chat was always sort of. I was like, yeah, whatever, I couldn't even rest on it because it was so absurd, you know what I mean?
It's,
I mean, I understand the connection because it's a black man, blah, 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 but no, that's just a little bit too thick, you know? But at the end of the day, though, you know, this, yeah, I can't even believe this is happening, and this whole speech, I can't wait to sort of hear what the hell he's supposed to be saying. Now, he's escalating, yet bringing it to an end. Is that the Orwellian spin we got going?
Yeah, it's an escalation, and we'll escalate, and as quick as we're done escalating, we'll come home. And quick as we're done escalating means just in time for the November 2012 elections so that he can stand on the stump, so that he can stand there at his nominating convention and say, and I promised you that I would end the war in Afghanistan, and I have.
Okay, and so is the, well, what's happening on in the progressives? I mean, are they embracing it, or?
No! Not that I can see. Everybody's...
I just wonder.
No. I mean, no. I mean, nobody... It's up the flagpole, and very few in the liberal progressive community are saluting.
Okay, because, you know, I just wonder, because, people are willing to sort of extend for Obama, which, yeah, I do understand. But we seem to be at the, well, you guys ain't going nowhere anyway, so, you... So that's.
But you know, this is nothing. How can I put this? This is sort of a really big FU to the liberal community, but it's not the first FU to the liberal community. By a long shot.
The
gay community got FU'd. The environmental community largely got FU'd. The what community didn't? In the liberal community, get a big FU. You know, all the while that the right wing scream, he's as liberal as Mao.
No, it's true. But, I mean, this particular thing just flies in the face. It's just so absurd because the same man and his middle, whatever party he got going on, they turn around and start talking about this deficit BS. You know what I mean? Including Obama and their sort of, entitlement reform euphemism for trying to decimate that BS, and at the same time, this is going on. You see what I mean? You don't have to be paying attention to see that there is something wrong. You see what I mean?
Yeah, I do. And the fact
it's just blatant.
Yes, and I think in a way that's kind of what's so damn shocking. I mean, there's not even pretense on this. It's just straight up. Screw all of you. Who do you think you are?
No, but then
what do you think you did? Elect me or something?
And then we're going to have to watch them come talking about how they need to dismantle the last vestige of, the New Deal. And it's a Nixon to China moment. You know what I'm saying? And it's scary. See, that scares me.
But, Kucinich is spot on all of this, okay? Dennis Kucinich, I guess, sometime like around now or maybe a few minutes ago, appeared on MSNBC to talk about this, and it'll probably show up on YouTube in a matter of almost instantaneously. But just by way of a little statement, Congressman Kucinich said that he will address the whole thing tomorrow. But he says in the interim, the community I represent in Cleveland, Ohio, is suffering from massive unemployment, record home foreclosures, and small business failures. People are losing their jobs, their health care, their homes, their savings, their investments, and their retirement security. The middle class is gravely threatened. What is happening in Cleveland is occurring nationwide. Yet Wall Street received over $13 trillion in bailouts, with untold millions for high salaries and bonuses, while Main Street loses its power through unemployment, reduced wages and benefits, and little or no access to credit or investment capital. There is something fundamentally wrong with our economy, which borrowing more money to spend on war cannot and will not cure. Perhaps nation building should begin at home. An escalation of the war in Afghanistan at a time of such economic dislocation and hardship raises questions about America's priorities and whether or not we are losing our way as we attempt to stride aside the globe as some colossus. Tomorrow we will begin anew the discussion.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, and that is just it. That whole idea of us doing this escalation in the face of what the Senate just described in a nutshell, and I think that is what's really troubling to me, you know? It is not that...
Because understand, yeah, Sandra, this means that everything ends. This means everything ends because there's an actual number out there of how much per day it costs to keep a soldier in Afghanistan. And it is a staggering sum.
Yeah, but the thing is, this isn't even real politics that's going on internationally. This is absurd. It's not even real. The realists would say you need to pull back. You can't afford to do this. State preservation is paramount, and this action is not preserving the state. It's putting the state at risk.
No, it's not real politic at all. What it is an exercise in profound national hubris. And underneath this little ugly act of hubris, which, as we recall from our Greek tragedy, never ends well, because it's the hubris that gets you brought down, underneath the hubris is this ugly little thing, this nasty little phrase called American exceptionalism.
Oh, please. Yikes.
Yeah, I know. But we both know what American exceptionalism is, right? That's that hubris that says just because everybody else failed, well, all that needs to happen is for Americans to do it. And it'll happen as it will succeed as if by magic because we are America.
I mean, it's the city on the hill, that whole fairy tale, you know. I don't even know what's going on. It just seems to be so wrong-headed, and we have to hear this speech telling us that we're still in danger somehow. I'm in danger by what's going on with these freaks.
Yeah.
I know about Al-Qaeda, but I know about these Democrats, and I say that because they're the ones at all levels of power now, right?
Well, and in many instances, refusing to wield the power that we gave them to wield.
Right.
We didn't put them there for bipartisanship. We put them there to correct the ship of state and change course away from the damned iceberg. But they don't want to.
No, that's the thing, you know, and it's just sort of, you know, of course, these numbers, 1 in 8 on food stamps.
Yeah.
Well, what the hell?
And you know, remember what that means. That's 1 in 8 human beings in this country are living on $3 a day of food assistance.
Well, yeah, that's the other thing. When it's discussed, they always seem to forget the pittance that it is, you know.
It's lower than pittance. It really is.
And no, but just the scope of that gap, it's obscene. Okay, and I think that's, you know, I think that's what my problem is. It's just bowled over by the obscenity of it all. I mean, it makes me sick.
But we do know that hubris gets punished. What happens to us? What does this cost us, Sandra?
No, it's going to cost us, though. This is what I'm saying.
Right, that's what I mean. That's what I mean. This is not our hubris. You know, remember, you know, and I'm not trying to be too obtuse, but remember, Oedipus met his daddy at the crossroads, and he didn't know it was his daddy. It was just some asshole who was harassing him, so he fought him and killed him.
Mm.
And he goes on in, the king is dead, he becomes king, he marries his mama, he doesn't know it's his mama, and does everything that a married couple does, and they have children. And then the gods send a plague to Thebes, and who dies? People who had absolutely nothing to do with what Oedipus did at the crossroads or did with his mama. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know that there are so many layers and so many lessons that go unlearnt and untaught in this sort of ancient archetypal wisdom that undergirds the very nature of the human of the human condition, and that's one of them. You know, it's a tragedy, and Oedipus has to claw out his eyes, yada yada yada, but people died in the streets of Thebes because of what Oedipus had done unknowingly. And the gods punished the people who had absolutely nothing to do with it. And that's what's going to happen in America, Sandra.
Well, no, I mean, it's like, yeah, I just, you know, I see they do this, and then all of a sudden, everything's going to come to a stop because they have to get the deficit under control. And these idiots, because they've paid themselves handsomely, they're all sorted, they're going to say, okay, it's time for us to raise the interest rate. When they raise the interest rates from zero that they have now, all hell's going to break loose in this country again for us.
Right.
And on the other hand, at the moment, they're just leaving them at zero. So you have this carry trade problem where bubbles are being inflated around the world. The mother of all bubbles is being inflated because you can borrow dollars at zero and go invest it in all kinds of currencies all over the world, Bob. Okay?
Yeah.
And it's just a joke. I mean...
Well, you know, it's one of those moments where you drag Hunter Thompson out of the cannon's mouth, or wherever it was he wound up, to repeat for us what he was saying all through the 90s. Big darkness soon come.
Well, I don't know. I don't, you know, I'm just sort of... Because, see, the juxtaposition of all I can hear is whether or not Tiger talks to the police. And now I have to look at Obama, you know, getting his war on. You know, there's just sort of nothing in between, right?
Right. Well, I think it was Keith Olbermann last night who said, you know, as of tomorrow night, you become the war president, Mr. Obama.
Olbermann and whoever, you know, in the hopes of what, shaming him or bringing him to a census or something, but I just think that that ship has sailed because he's made his choice. You know, we all have to make choices, right?
Sure.
And I don't know who this choice is going to be good for. I guess that's what I'm...
Oh, I do. It's going to be good for GE. It's going to be good for General Dynamics. It's going to be good for Lockheed Martin Marietta.
And whoever's selling the $420 a gallon gas.
Oh, it's going to be great for them. It's going to be wonderful for the Saudis.
And then if he's sending 30,000 mercenaries along, you know what I mean? You always have to dig a little deeper. 30,000 troops, that's U.S., and then how many Blackwater or whatever other sort of private... You know what I mean?
Right.
Warlord, American...
Yeah, this... Yeah, 30,000, no. No, it's going to be a lot more than that by the time you're done with the unofficial numbers.
But we don't get to hear that in his lovely speech coming up at West Point.
Doesn't he give pretty speeches?
I'm over it. I just am sort of, you know, a bit frightened at how it's going to be prettied up, you know.
And, well, the other thing that just drives me crazy is that, and I alluded to some of this, in what I said, and that is that everybody who has an agenda that they are trying, a liberal or progressive-based agenda that they have been trying to advance for almost a year now, needs to realize that when this happens, they can sit down and shut up too, because there ain't going to be no money for that. There's not going to be any money for human rights initiatives or environmental initiatives or health care initiatives. And the administration is not going to have time to focus on whether or not we should allow gays to serve openly in the military. Everything gets shut down because of this. And if there are organizations out there or groups of people saying, well, you know, this really isn't this is not my issue. I'm more concerned about fill in the blank. They need a little cold glass of water thrown in their face, and say, then this is your issue. Because your issue ain't squat once this goes down.
Well, yeah, and I just, you know, I mean, I'll let you go, but I just can't help but think that this can't even be happening. It's so outrageous and so wrong-headed. Just economically, I'm confused. Because what's, you know, we're going to get a jobs report on Friday, right? Don't they come out every Friday?
I think you're right, yeah.
And it's just sort of, you know, what's going on? Foreclosures are, like, accelerating. All the indicators for just people living day to day is just way out of whack. And this is what he can devote his time to?
Beats the hell out of me.
That's all. And I mean, and I don't mean to, you know, just make it all sound rhetorical.
Oh, I know, but
I really don't have the answers. I am sort of like.
Yes, you do.
Well, no, but it's just.
Yes, you do. You, no, don't sell yourself short, Sandra. You do, and I do, and most of the people, I would guess 99% of the people listening to this program do have the answer, and the answer is get out of Afghanistan. Waste no time. Don't let the door hit you on the ass on the way out of Afghanistan. Leave. Go and be gone and darken the doorway no more and spill not another pinprick's worth of blood on that soil that is American. Get out. Go. Leave. Be home. And that is the answer, and it's not Zen, and it doesn't require a Jedi mind trick, and it's not secret, and it just get out.
And it's just sort of like, you know, we looked at the elite, you know, crack up with the financial sector, and now they're just going to finish the job up with their military exploits. You know what I mean? Because this don't make no sense at all.
Yeah, where does the United States go to declare bankruptcy?
Well, that's that big carry tray I'm talking to you about.
Yeah. I know. Sandra, I thank you, and I appreciate your input. And, you know, sometimes in the face of madness like this, there's not much more to do than sit and scratch our heads and just wonder what in the hell is going through his.
Exactly. Okay, well, have a good evening.
All right, you take care.
Bye.
Bye now. From California, that is our buddy Sandra, that would be Professor Sandra, and we will move on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Kevin.
Hey, Kevin, what's up?
How you doing, brother?
I'm frustrated.
Oh, welcome to the club.
I live there. I live at the club. I have a little cot in the back of the club.
And you longer there, you'll be a stool, right?
Oh, I'm already. Well, they've already got me raking the leaves.
Yeah. All I'm saying is, I understand the frustration, but he needs to stay alive. Screw with the military-industrial complex is dead.
I understand that. But you know what? He signed up for it. You know, it's like a marriage. Sickness and in health.
I understand. And last week was a warning. I don't care what anyone... You can say I'm a conspiracy theorist.
Whoa, hadn't considered that.
When that couple came... Because, come on, in your heart of hearts, you think if that was Bush on that party, you think that couple would have gotten through?
Not a chance.
And even if they did, they would be locked under the prison by now.
But, you know, yeah, because there were all kinds of things that were highly disturbing, like that statement, well, they got through the magnetometer, so they wasn't carrying no guns or nothing.
Yeah, well... There are a bunch of silverware over there. They could have done some pottery.
Well, never mind the silverware. Am I the only guy that gets the Cabela's catalog with the cool ceramic blades in it?
I guess so.
They don't set off metal detectors.
Oh, boy. All I'm saying is, I think he just wants to stay alive. So, and the thing is, you got to understand, who has that, I guess, 35 or one-third of America who's like, no... You know what is going to be the boss with me. So he has to do this in baby steps.
I don't think there's that. Kevin, I'm sorry. I don't think there's any baby steps.
Or he has to tread on a... He has to walk on a razor.
But this is... I mean, this is a straight-up sellout.
Oh, you know, put it this way. You know what I say? As an African-American man, we all have our Uncle Tom moments. Even the best of us. Even Malcolm X had an Uncle Tom moment.
Man, that is a bitter pill. I ain't gonna go nowhere near.
But it's true. It's like Congressman Charles Rangel when he got all in a hyper when what's his name from Venezuela called George Bush a jackass or whatever.
Well, apparently you've got one in agreement in our buddy Marty.
We all have our Uncle Tom moment.
He said, I guess I was one of the few who actually heard him say that he, Obama, considered Afghanistan to be the right war. No, I heard it too. And Marty says, you know, I'm not that surprised. I'm not even that upset because I knew he wasn't a peace president. He said, and as Kevin indicated, he got a warning with the gate crashers, you know, anyway.
Yeah. We all have our Uncle Tom moment, and you just got to take it and swallow it. Trust me, I've had a few Uncle Tom moments.
Well, you know what, and I think that phrase carries particular freight, Kevin, but if you are in the middle or the working class, whatever you prefer to call it, everybody has that moment. Some time or another in their lives, when they are called upon to face dire consequences if they do not knuckle under.
Oh yeah, and you know we all have, regardless of color, when you have to yield to a higher authority, you're gonna have to count.
And few among us there are who won't. It has become abundantly clear to me by the reading that I've been doing lately. And I think it's time for me to put the book down too, just because I've started dreaming it, and that means I'll be, you know, no, you know, got to have a little peace sometime. But it's abundantly clear to me that JFK died for his principles.
Oh yeah.
There is absolutely no debate about the fact that Martin Luther King Jr. died for his principles. There is no doubt that Bobby Kennedy died for his principles. And even though people from his own faction killed him, there's no doubt to me that Malcolm X died for his principles.
Exactly.
And you know what? Maybe after they're dead, we say, oh, they were great men. But we forget to note, oh, they are great dead men.
Yeah.
And maybe it is that most of us in the human experience don't have that medal. When the rubber meets the road, we say yes, boss, and we move on, and we go do what we did, and we eat our bread and we curse our bones.
Exactly. And the thing is, the reality is, very few people want to be a martyr. You know, here's a man.
I don't think any of the people I just named wanted to be one.
Be a martyr, but they signed on and they knew what they had to do.
And they could not live with themselves being any other way than what they were.
Exactly. You know, and the fact of the matter is, Barack Obama probably said, "Look, man, I'm going to do whatever I can, but I have to go along to get along. I have two little girls. I have a wife. I don't come from money like the Kennedys."
Then you know what. And I'm going to say this, and I'll probably get letters from people saying, I ain't going to listen to you no more.
Mm-hmm.
If that's what you've realized a year into your term, resign.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. You know, he should have known, and I agree with you 100%.
Go be a law professor. Live a quiet life. You know, I'm sorry that I constantly go back to ancient history, but you're kind of willing to go there with me because you talk about it too. There's that legend of Achilles. Who, before he signed on for the Trojan War, talked with his mama. And his mama told him, if you don't go to that war, you will live to be a ripe old age, you will have a lovely wife, you will have beautiful children, and you will be remembered by that wife and those children when you were gone, and you will be remembered by your grandchildren. But after a generation or two, you will be forgotten. If you go to the war, you will not come home, and you will be a name that will live throughout all of human existence. And Achilles chose to go to the war. Well, Barack Obama has just chosen to stay home, live to a ripe old age, and be forgotten. 200 years from now, if there is still a United States of America, he will be a Jeopardy question asked by Cyber Alex. Who was the first black president of America? And by then, maybe we will have had 15 or 16 of them. And you know, ding, you know, who was Martin Luther King, Cyber Alex? Oh, sorry. Ding, who was Barack Obama? Yes, that's right. And that's the sad thing. I think Barack Obama has trivialized himself today.
I don't know. I still got to say, because, he's only a year in, you know. A lot can happen. Who knows?
Well, you know what? Maybe we roll the dice over there. The 30,000 get there, and all the Afghan warlords and all the Taliban go, well, shit, you're serious about it. You sent 30,000 more soldiers. Damn, I guess we'll just disband and sit down, come to the table and talk and sing Kumbaya and put together a constitution and start ordering color TV sets.
No, I don't think.
But I'd say my odds of winning the lottery are a little better than the odds of that happening.
Absolutely right, but I try to have some kind of faith.
But you know how I am on doing faith.
I do
facts. I do the real world, and there is nothing right now, Kevin, in the real world that suggests to me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's hard. I can't even bring myself to say it.
Yeah, but the thing is. I don't know. It's just one of those things where it's like, I know deep down, he's not like George, who's just a total prick. You know, this is a good, decent human being.
Yeah, but look where we are, Kevin, okay? This went down today. Here we are. The whole world knows that Barack Obama is going to send 30,000 more of the flower of American youth into the now frozen meat grinder of Afghanistan. Okay? So naturally Politico goes over to interview Dick Cheney about it.
Oh, wow.
And they didn't even write a story, they just transcribed what he said. No kidding. It was a 90-minute interview and it was nothing but a transcription. Cheney said the president's agonizing about Afghanistan strategy. Has consequences for your forces in the field. Every time he delays, defers, debates, changes his position, it begins to raise questions. Is the commander-in-chief really behind what they've been asked to do? Here's a guy without much experience who campaigned against much of what we put in place and who now travels around the world apologizing. I think our adversaries, especially when that's preceded by a deep bow, see that as a sign of weakness.
Oh, God. Why doesn't Cheney die already?
because evil doesn't die. Evil doesn't go away until you drive a stake through its heart and dump its bones somewhere without access to the soil of the old country. Okay? But honestly, this isn't going to let up. I'm not kidding. I don't have my threadbare purple velvet robe with the moon and stars and the magic eight ball with the crack in the face that always says answer hazy ask again later. I don't have any of that on, but I know that 30,000 is going to be 30,000 too few for the right wing, and I know that if it was 60, it'd be 60,000 too few for the right wing, and that if we sent a million, they'd want to send two.
Exactly.
And that if we actually conquered, if we did what Eugene Finnerman was talking about with the ancient Greeks. And we actually colonized and set up outpost colonies of American exceptionalism in Afghanistan and built cities from the ground up. If we did that, then the right wing would say, well, see, it worked in Afghanistan. Let's go do somebody else. There is no satisfying those bloodthirsty sons of bitches, Kevin.
You're absolutely right.
There's no right answer for them. There is nothing that Barack Obama can do that will please them. So for the love of God, why doesn't he just do what his base sent him there to do and tell the right wing to go suck on a lemon?
Yeah. Well, what you just said, okay, right there, is probably what it is to work in corporate America if you're African American. With a college
degree. And this in from Sandra following up, she said, well, Uncle Tom needs to resign.
Yeah. Well, I just say, I give him, you know, being in having some kind of experience being under a leadership role with a bunch of middle-aged white guys underneath me, that I give him, because I know what he's going through. I just know what he's going through.
But how much of a pass can that generate, Kevin?
You know, it can, and the thing is, with, put it to you this way, I say this, a lesser man would have said, you know what, would have resigned. A lesser man would have resigned.
I mean, but, you know, let's, and I'm wondering, and this probably marks me as getting this wrong somehow or another, but I'm wondering how this is going to play in the black community.
It's not going to play, well, you see, it depends on what segment of the black community, because I would say for the most part, the black community is, especially the African-American community, because, you know, I come from a different kind of black community.
Yeah, sure.
It's going to play, it's going to be like, well, you know, I think it's going to be what it is. They're going to back him, because the reality is, the African-American community, from my point of view, is not that different from the white conservative community.
So when this decision winds up in some young black man who had no choice but to go to the military because, you know, he's a smart guy,
but,
you know, no jobs and no college. And the military offers, well, son, all you got to do is go survive Afghanistan. You can come back and go to college. Pretty good deal, isn't it, son? And he comes home in a box. And Mama starts tearing at her hair and her clothing and weeping and wailing, as any mama would.
But Mama gets a $250,000 to $500,000 worth of insurance money.
But Mama's not going to look up at the White House and go, "Hope and Change just did this."
I don't know about all that. Because Mother doesn't think about the bigger picture and who's really making money off of this. Don't forget that insurance policy that he'll get. And all the benefits, and he gets to die, get a nice send-off in Arlington with the 21-gun salute. Trust me, I've seen this movie before.
I don't want to go to that movie no more.
Too many times and too close for my own good. And if you say something wrong about it, they'll be like, "Well, why don't you up and leave America?" Which, you know, on my end, I'm about to do, God willing. You know, black America is very much like, you know, conservative white America. The only thing, they're just on two separate parties, because black America doesn't like the Jim Crow that, you know, conservative white America believes in. But, you know, a lot of times, from the outside looking in, you know, it's kind of like, hey, you know, Ebony and Ivory, they play together in perfect harmony.
Bitter pill.
Yeah, and that's just the cold hard reality. You know, it's this, you know, that black America is very conservative. Why do you think, you know, the most homophobic sectors of this country is African American?
No, well, no argument, no argument. You know, I can. It's. Oh wow, some talk show host, huh? Kevin, you say that you're getting ready, God willing, to bug out. And that's no pejorative, okay? It's just a phrase. You're getting ready to leave. You're going to get out of the country. And I understand the urge to do it. But at the same time, I can hear you wanting not to.
Yeah.
I can hear the ache in your voice at the at what it is that you feel has become of this country that drives you to such a decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I love what America stands for. I especially love New York. You know, and it's a hurtful thing when you see your country defies every bit of your conscience. you know, and your thing of what's right and what's wrong. You know, I don't want my hand in anything that kills off brown people anymore. I don't want it.
Just done with it.
Yeah.
And not willing to participate.
Yeah. And like the late, great Timothy Leary said, you know, you have to tune in, then drop out. And, you know, that's what I really need to do at this point.
And I understand it. God knows I do. Yeah. Kevin, wonderful conversation. Thank you for offering. Thank you for offering the perspective. I do appreciate it. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye. Before we head back to the phones, a couple of emails. Your thoughts. This from Reverbo. The last vestige of our legendary, read delusional, exceptionalism is on the battlefield. Though we haven't really seen proof of that for 65 years. When it comes to civic projects, forget it. This was supposed to be a new beginning, a purge of the vampires, and instead it feels more like the end. I worked for the so-called change, Reverbo says. This is not easy for me to say. Subject line, we're not exceptional at home, though, are we? Signed, Reverbo, no shortage of criticism. And from Gail in Australia, she says, I've been sitting here reading old Kurt Vonnegut articles and interviews this morning. It's morning there, you know. And she offers a piece of Kurt Vonnegut from 2004. Vonnegut wrote, and this is so fitting because I know that Reverbo is also a student of Vonnegut, having sent some along from time to time. Vonnegut wrote in 2004, many years ago, I was so innocent, I still considered it possible that we could become the humane and reasonable America so many members of my generation used to dream of. We dreamed of such an America during the Great Depression, when there were no jobs. And then we fought, and often died, for that dream during the Second World War, when there was no peace. But I know now that there is not a chance in hell of America's becoming humane and reasonable. Because power corrupts us. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. Human beings are chimpanzees who get crazy drunk on power. By saying that our leaders are power-drunk chimpanzees, am I in danger of wrecking the morale of our soldiers fighting and dying in the Middle East? Their morale, like so many bodies, is already shot to pieces. They are being treated, as I never was, like toys. A rich kid got for Christmas. Sigh. Gail. Miss him. It seems that the great voices are we are found wanting for great voices to put real meat on the bones of what these tragic decisions actually mean. From Michael Moore, no, he didn't send this to me, he just published it to the internet and thought I'd share it with you if you haven't heard it. Dear President Obama, do you really want to be the new war president? If you go to West Point and announce that you are increasing rather than withdrawing the troops in Afghanistan, you are the new war president, pure and simple. And with that, you will do the worst possible thing you could do. Destroy the hopes and dreams so many millions have placed in you. With just one speech tomorrow night, you will turn a multitude of young people who were the backbone of your campaign into disillusioned cynics. You will teach them what they've always heard is true, that all politicians are alike. I simply can't believe you're about to do what they say you are going to do. Please say it isn't so. It is not your job to do what the generals tell you to do. We are a civilian-run government. We tell the Joint Chiefs what to do, not the other way around. That's the way General Washington insisted it must be. That's what President Truman told General MacArthur when MacArthur wanted to invade China. "You're fired," said Truman, and that was that. And you should have fired General McChrystal when he went to the press to preempt you, telling the press what you had to do. Let me be blunt. We love our kids in the armed forces, but we effing hate these generals. From Westmoreland in Vietnam to, yes, even Colin Powell for lying to the UN with his made-up drawings of WMD. He has since sought redemption. So now you feel backed into a corner. 30 years ago, this past Thursday, this past Thanksgiving, the Soviet generals had a cool idea. Let's invade Afghanistan! Well, that turned out to be the final nail in the USSR's coffin. There's a reason they don't call Afghanistan the Garden State, though they probably should, seeing how the corrupt President Karzai, whom we back, has his brother in the heroin trade raising poppies. Afghanistan's nickname is the Graveyard of Empires. If you don't believe it, give the British a call. I'd have you call Genghis Khan, but I lost his number. I do have Gorbachev's number, though. I'm sure he could give you an earful about the historic blunder you're about to commit. With our economic collapse still in full swing, and our precious young men and women being sacrificed on the altar of arrogance and greed, the breakdown of this great civilization we call America will head full throttle into oblivion if you become the war president. Empires never think the end is near until the end is here. Empires think that more evil will force the heathens to toe the line, and yet it never works. The heathens usually tear them to shreds. Choose carefully, President Obama. You of all people know that it doesn't have to be this way. You still have a little time to listen to your heart and your own clear thinking. You know that nothing good can come from sending more troops halfway around the world to a place neither you nor they understand, to achieve an objective that neither you nor they understand, in a country that does not want us there. You can feel it in your bones. I know you know that there are less than 100 Al-Qaeda left in Afghanistan. 100,000 troops trying to crush 100 guys living in caves? Are you serious? Have you drunk Bush's Kool-Aid? I refuse to believe it. Your potential decision to expand the war while saying that you're doing it so you can end the war will do more to set your legacy in stone than any of the great things you've said and done in your first year. One more throwing a bone from you to the Republicans, and the coalition of the hopeful and the hopeless may be gone. And this nation will be back in the hands of the haters quicker than you can shout teabag. Choose carefully, Mr. President. Your corporate backers are going to abandon you as soon as it is clear you are a one-term president and that the nation will be safely back in the hands of the usual idiots who do their bidding. That could be Wednesday morning. We the people still love you. We the people still have a sliver of hope. But we the people can't take it anymore. We can't take your caving in over and over when we elected you to by a big wide margin of millions to get in there and get the job done. What part of landslide victory don't you understand? Don't be deceived into thinking that sending a few more troops into Afghanistan will make a difference or earn you the respect of the haters. They will not stop until this country is torn asunder and every last dollar is extracted from the poor and soon to be poor. You could send a million troops over there and the crazy right still wouldn't be happy. You would still be the victim of their incessant venom on hate radio and television, because no matter what you do, you can't change the one thing about yourself that sends them over the edge. The haters were not the one who elected you, and they can't be won over by abandoning the rest of us. President Obama, it's time to come home. Ask your neighbors in Chicago. and the parents of the young men and women doing the fighting and dying if they want more billions and more troops sent to Afghanistan, do you think they will say, no, we don't need health care, we don't need jobs, we don't need homes, you go on ahead, Mr. President, and send our wealth and our sons and daughters overseas because we don't need them either? What would Martin Luther King Jr. do? What would your grandmother do? Not send more poor people to kill other poor people who pose no threat to them. That's what they do. Not spend billions and trillions to wage war while American children are sleeping on the streets and standing in bread lines. All of us that voted and prayed for you and cried the night of your victory have endured an Orwellian hell of 8 years of crimes committed in our name, torture, rendition, suspension of the Bill of Rights, invading nations who had not attacked us, blowing up neighborhoods that Saddam might be in, but never was, slaughtering wedding parties in Afghanistan. We watched as hundreds of thousands of Iraqi civilians were slaughtered, and tens of thousands of our brave young men and women were killed, maimed, or endured mental anguish, the full terror of which we scarcely know. When we elected you, we didn't expect miracles. We didn't even expect much change. But we expected some. We thought you would stop the madness, stop the killing, stop the insane idea that men with guns can reorganize a nation that doesn't even function as a nation and never, ever has. Stop. 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 For the sake of the lives of young Americans and Afghan civilians, stop. For the sake of your presidency, hope, and the future of our nation, stop. For God's sake, stop. For a few minutes more, we still have hope. Tomorrow, we shall see. The ball is in your court. You don't have to do this. You can be a profile in courage. You can be your mother's son. We're counting on you. Indeed. So we are halfway through the program for the evening. We will take a brief break and come back to your phone calls. You know the number. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head-on. Direct dial is 304-658-3333. While there are a few moments left to have hope, let us have it. You're listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. You're listening to The Horn. Locked out doors and windows. See the man. Jason Isbell in the 400 unit, however long. And that's just the name of the album, is Jason Isbell and the 400 unit. And if you don't own it, I suggest you do. I listen to that song a lot. And let me just put it, before we go to the phones and do a couple more emails, let me just put kind of a coda on that. This is grim business we've been discussing for the last, hour and 35 minutes. And it feels pretty weighty, and it feels pretty dark, and it feels pretty awful. And it's pretty sickening. But let me suggest another interpretation, if I may. Just as in discussing with Kevin the business about Oedipus, you know, there's always another lesson behind the lesson. The obvious lesson is there for the people that can only get obvious lessons. Subtext is there for those who seek it. And there is a subtext to this. Tonight we're free. This is a night of liberation. Tonight we are utterly and absolutely uncaptive. You're free. You are liberated. You don't have to swallow that bitter, vomitous taste in the back of your throat anymore and say, yeah, but, you know, he told us we'd have change. You don't have to do that anymore. For those of us persons of conscience, and I realize that we are a minority, but for those of us who are persons of conscience, we're free. We are utterly and absolutely free. No party binds us. No call to party loyalty binds us. We're free. We are absolutely free to follow our morals and follow our conscience and feel not one whit of misgiving about it. We're free. If Mr. Obama wants to escalate in Afghanistan, that's a decision that you and I were made no party to. We were not consulted. We were really, really not consulted. Never mind the fact that we put him in office. We were not consulted. We are now free. The marriage is annulled. It's over. You don't have to make excuses for him anymore. You don't have to say, well, but, when somebody who hates his guts starts talking. You can just look up and say, hey, he's a politician. What in God's name did I think he was? You don't have to say I was wrong. You don't have to say I was misguided or mistaken. You're just free. Take a deep breath, free American. Take a deep, sweet, long, invigorating breath. You're free. He makes no excuses to you, and you owe none to him. Wow, I can't wait to see the hate mail I get for this. But you're free. Any sense of obligation, any sense of contract with that administration is over. You're free. You can participate or sit out the election, and you know you don't even have to look up and go, yeah, but what if the right wing gets in? Because you know, what we're doing tonight with Afghanistan is what the right wing would do. The right wing didn't get in. The right wing never left. You're free. Perhaps we can congregate around Congressman Kucinich or Congressman Grayson. Perhaps we can look to Bernie Sanders in the Senate to once in a while speak some common sense and human decency and dignity. But we're free. We're free. I have never said this, I have never contemplated this, but I'm going to tell you something that I'm strongly considering doing. Next time I'm across the river, I may just slip into the county courthouse and change my registration. Change it to independent. That means I get to vote in anybody's primary I want to. We're free. And in this case, freedom is something more than nothing left to lose. To be free to walk in the sunshine of one's own clear conscience, if one has the moral fiber to do it, is one of the greatest things that a human being can ever experience. And we can learn together if you want. I mean, I'll be happy to participate in the discussion of what it means and how we go about being it. Because there's more than putting flowers in your hair and dancing in the yard, naked or otherwise. You don't want me dancing naked in the yard, trust me. Not even dead, dark cloud cover and no moon. You don't want it. But we can determine what that freedom means. And we can live that way. And we can speak our consciences and speak our minds and not give a rat's ass what some member of some administration thinks. Because we are free. A little follow-up to Gail's, now we've got dueling Vonnegut quotes. Reverbo offers from Dead Eye Dick, 1982, quote, "That is my principal objection to life. I think it is too easy, when alive, to make perfectly horrible mistakes." "Then this," says Reverbo, "you want to know something? We're still in the Dark Ages. The Dark Ages. They haven't ended yet." Reverbo adds, "Kurt Vonnegut, born 11 November, Armistice Day, 1922, died April of 2007. He had a few things to say about war, as I recall. I've wished he could have lived to see the election of 2008 and the progress that was promised, and that people like Vonnegut were waiting for their whole lives. Now I'm not so sure. How many more disappointments could the old guy take? How many more can we take?" From Marty, "I'm not sure as what is bothering me more. Once again, I knew what Obama would be, corporate, and what he wouldn't be, peace. Typically, the first black to achieve anything becomes just a tool of whatever the powers pulling the strings want, meaning we'd still be here with Hillary, only on a different day. The exception, of course, is the late Thurgood Marshall. Clarence Thomas actually acts like he's the first black on the Supreme Court. Now, back to my subject, I'm not certain what's bothering me more, the fact that Obama's ordering 30,000 or so more troops to Afghanistan, or the fact that he felt the need to go to a military academy to make the announcement." Just a bloody photo op. Bloody indeed. We will go to, I think, coverage of the speech here in about 18 minutes, but in the time remaining, let us go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Let's spoke up that email some more, because I have some stuff to say about this. But before I do, Bob, did you ever get a chance to watch that Evil Bee video?
No.
Someone needs to send it to you. Every single little intricacy in that video, it is so relevant to what we're speaking of right now. And I can say it like this. The whole video is an entire multi-layered cipher. And I don't care who you are listening to this. You can be the most brilliant person in the world. You will not get all of it, even if you see it 20 times. That's how amazing this thing is. So, if people want to check it out, type in Evil B at YouTube, you'll be in for a shock. I think it was on the front page of the Head-On Radio Network site at one time anyway.
I'll try to go. You know, and I don't make excuses, David. It's just there's a lot of demands on my time. And I don't get the time to watch half the stuff I'd like to. I saw Charlie the Unicorn for the first time over the weekend because Margie came in and insisted that I watch it. And that was a delightful little giggle. I don't know if you ever saw that.
I don't think I've heard that one, though.
Yeah, just Charlie the Unicorn. Go watch them. There's three of them. It's just silly as shit. Nice little moment of escape.
Right. Well, my feelings on this are a bit different. I remember I was telling someone the other day, or I was telling this to my dad. I said, America deserves what it gets. And the question I pose to you, Bob, is what does America deserve?
Well, I don't know. I don't know that I'm necessarily down with your premise. Because my children, my grandchildren don't deserve some evil fate to befall them because an evil decision was made in the White House in Washington, D.C. They don't deserve that, but it's damn well freight training right at them.
Yeah, I know.
But they don't deserve it. People of good conscience, people of solid moral stature don't deserve losing jobs or being bankrupted by illness or crushed by disease or tormented by insurance companies, but it's damn sure what they're getting. They don't deserve it. You know, that's why I raised the issue of Oedipus. You know, the plague struck Thebes. It didn't strike Oedipus. It was people who were totally innocent who were being struck dead in the streets by plague, all because of something that another guy did that he didn't even know he was doing. And that's the lesson of that piece of ancient Greek genius. It's not don't screw your mama and murder your daddy. That's easy. Any fool can figure that out. The lesson of that piece of ancient Greek tragedy is that what is done without even fully realizing the consequences is a price that is paid by not by the person who makes the decision by God, but by the people who are innocent of it.
Well, you know, for those people who decided to, I'll give you a quote to Obama, the people who were rolling with him. He did say, you guys make a pretty good photo op. You guys can go look that one up. He actually said that to when the troops were standing right next to him.
Look, I know, you know, Marty's absolutely correct. He campaigned on the idea that Afghanistan is the right war. When, in fact, anybody with an ounce of common sense understands that there isn't a right war. There are only wars you choose to fight and wars that you are forced to fight. And in the case of Afghanistan and Iraq, those are both wars that the United States chose to fight. We were forced to fight the Second World War.
The argument that someone would make for that
is that Afghanistan hit us first?
No, they won't say that. It's when you say what it is that you're saying, most likely people come back with, and they know it's short term, but it's better to live in the myth than going insane for these people. That's why I say most of the people who agree with war aren't, and this is where we part company a bit, because I don't think Republicans and a lot of the conservatives are evil. I see them as psychologically dysfunctional.
Yeah, but I don't disagree with you, David, but the psychological dysfunction leads to evil conduct.
I understand that.
You know, Jeffrey Dahmer had a broken brain, but he was still putting people in his freezer and eating them later. And that's evil.
I understand that, but, I mean, the problem is that there needs to be a myth somewhere. If everything else is rigged and it's a joke, some people are just going to cling to the patriotic myth of war, and that's what we teach our kids.
But Barrett,
not you.
No. But bear in mind, David, that's what makes this upcoming decision so absolutely heinous is the fact that upwards of 80% of the United States doesn't want to be there. You know, That's more people than elected Barack Obama. That includes some Republicans. I mean, my God, there's a guy named Jason Chaffetz.
Yeah.
Okay, he looks like an Osmond. He's a congressman from Utah. You know, well, Utah. For God's sakes, Utah. And yesterday, he said to Politico, he said, so much of this is easy, black and white, but Afghanistan is very different and very difficult. I differ with him on that. He said, I can take pot shots at Acorn all day long and I'm good at it, but even though I am probably going against where the party is on this traditionally, I just think we need to stand up and support the notion that it's time to bring our soldiers home. And that's a Republican from Utah.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying, Bob, but I mean, no matter what we think of okay, say we do bring these soldiers home, I'm as cynical as the most cynical person you can find, and I know they'll just start another war and they'll make it even bigger so they won't go home.
You know what? That's one of the pieces of unappreciated genius of Bill Clinton. Because that crowd over there needled at him and needled at him and needled at him, trying to, you know, whether it was the coal or the aspirin factory in the Sudan, the World Trade Center bombing in 1993. They did everything in their power to get Bill Clinton to take their bait and start a war.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Clinton just wouldn't swallow the hook. Now, George W. Bush, he's a simpleton. It was like for Osama bin Laden to get him into a war in Afghanistan and Iraq was like taking falafel from a baby.
Right.
And sadly, it appears that the same is the case of Barack Obama. For different reasons.
Well,
I mean, and again, you know, I have to reemphasize. If this was a 52-48 split, and the 52 wanted to come home and the 48 wanted to stay, or the 48 wanted to come home and the 52 wanted to stay, whatever. I think I just screwed up. Then you could make a case for Barack Obama doing some proverbial baby splitting, which is apparently what he's attempting to do tonight. But we are talking about an overwhelming majority of America that wants nothing to do. Now, granted, there are various political reasons for wanting nothing to do. I'm sure that the minute that Jason Chaffetz, being as how he's a Republican, that if he got his way, his next speech on the floor was, well, we had to leave Afghanistan because Barack Obama's a big old chicken shit loser.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not some naive. I understand this, but America doesn't want this, and it is being forced on us anyway.
That is what
I think more than anything else calls this decision into profound question.
Well, I think that's part of the problem with our country as a whole, is we don't really have a voice for the people. We have a pretend voice. We have an imaginary voice. But we don't have a voice for the people, and the Democrats aren't a voice for clearly. For God's sakes, they're never going to be our voice, people. It doesn't matter how many people you turn around; they're always going to find a way to screw us over, even worse than before. And that's why this is a lesson we can all learn from. And it's like you said, we're free. But what it comes down to is the fact that, well, let's put it this way, because I haven't heard anyone say this. Obama never served in the military, people. I remember we said that about Cheney, and we said that about Bush. So guess what? We have a chicken hawk in office. He's never been on the battlefield, and that's the problem with our leaders. All of our leaders, they've never been on the battlefield. They've never experienced the blood. They've never experienced the murder, the genocide, the rape, they've never experienced. And I don't care how smart you think Obama is. He never frigging experienced it. It's over. He's a chicken hawk, and this just basically puts it out right there in the open. He's just like Bush in that regard, just like Cheney in that regard.
Well, you know, all I can say is if he wants to buy it, we need to make sure that he owns it. You know, it's that phony story of Colin Powell and the Pottery Barn rule.
Well, as I said, Bob, that's why I said when I was talking to you before, I said you'd never ever trust a president, a leader who has never been in military or combat. They'll always screw you over. They'll always F you over.
Nah, see, but I don't get down with that. No, because it's the guys who have been in combat, and it's the guys who have a military background. I mean, a lot of ours have, but, you know, Thomas Jefferson? Really? Screwed us over? John Adams? James Madison? Andrew Jackson was a general, and he committed an actual genocide.
There wasn't a presence of a war machine behind us this gigantic that we've seen before. That's the problem. And that's why we need someone who has been in the military.
You know, there was a war machine by the time Abraham Lincoln was president, and his service was about, you know, it wasn't the same level of cowardice. It wasn't cowardice at all, but it was about the same duration as that of George W. Bush. But he managed to get in and out of the Civil War. Then he got wasted. Ulysses S. Grant was a plum general, and Ulysses S. Grant then went on to run the single most corrupt administration in American history until Warren Gamaliel Harding took that award, until Richard Nixon took that award, until Ronald Reagan took that award, until George W. Bush absolutely ran out of the building with it.
I would say the war machine now is incredibly more subliminal, more entrenched, and that is why we can't have it any other way. As sad as that is, otherwise we're going to still be at this point every single time.
I think what you're describing, David, is the down spiral into empire. Because there is a model for this, and that is empire, where the leader becomes the general who can marshal the greatest amount of support. And Lord knows the first two or three centuries of the current era were rife with that. But let me try to get one more phone call in here before we go to the broadcast feed. I appreciate your thoughts, David. I really, really do. I'm about half and half with you.
All right.
All right. You take care.
Bye.
Bye. From Maine, that is David, and let's see if this long-suffering person has held on. Nope. Okay, well, I'll tell you what. Quick email. Kim writes in from Manhattan. Bob, I'm too chicken to call in, so I decided to write. Okay, Kim, we got to talk. We've never lost a caller yet. It's okay. Phone number, don't ever be afraid to call in. The first-time callers absolutely make my night. But anyway, Kim says, I have to tell you, your conversation with Kevin really pissed me off. I usually really enjoy his calls, but hearing him give a pass to Obama tonight really angered me. If Obama is so concerned about staying alive, and if he feels that he is being forced to make decisions that he doesn't believe in, and if he has any integrity left, then he should resign tonight. I have finally reached my limit of granting Obama absolution. I backed Obama strongly when he was a candidate, but he has time and again disappointed me, and to make this speech in West Point is as cynical as any move Bush ever made. It just disgusts me. Sorry about ranting, Bob. Oh, Kim, if you think that's ranting. Sorry about ranting, Bob, and I don't mean to be rough on Kevin, but I just had to. I love your show, Kim from Manhattan. Gosh, we think we're being rough on each other, and it's about as... No, that's just honesty. That's not being rough on any. I don't even think Kevin would think that anybody was being rough on him that way. And Cindy writes in from the Great Northwest saying, we don't deserve it. Talking about the question of, you know, what do we deserve? We don't deserve it, Cindy says. We don't deserve this any more than the Jews deserved Hitler. And that's the thing. workaday human beings don't deserve half of the misery that they are, that is forced upon them. I offer the following. Naturally, the common people don't want war. But after all, it is the leaders of the country who determine the policy. And it is always a simple matter to drag people along, whether it is a democracy or a fascist dictatorship or a parliament or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. This is easy. All you have to do is tell them that they're being attacked and denounce the pacifists for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in every country. I'm just going to let that statement stand on its own. Most of you know from whence it comes, but I'm not going to give the name of who said it. But what is there in that statement with which to argue? Not much. So when we come back, we will go to the feed, and I will probably have periodic hissy fits during the speech. When we come back, we will go to the feed. You and I, free, you and I, liberated, you and I, will go to the feed. And we will see what gets said in this really big, good speech. You know? Yeah. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
I hope somebody's calls getting soon. It's getting hard to find a place around. jumping like they're gonna come through my skin. If they could get along without the rest of me, it wouldn't matter if they did.
Preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95.
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
We now join an American tragedy already in progress.
Narrowly defined as disrupting, dismantling, and defeating Al-Qaeda and its extremist allies, and pledged to better coordinate our military and civilian efforts. Since then, we've made progress on some important objectives. High-ranking Al-Qaeda and Taliban leaders have been killed, and we've stepped up the pressure on Al-Qaeda worldwide. In Pakistan, that nation's army has gone on its largest offensive in years. In Afghanistan, we and our allies prevented the Taliban from stopping a presidential election. And although it was marred by fraud, that election produced a government that is consistent with Afghanistan's laws and constitution. Yet huge challenges remain. Afghanistan is not lost, but for several years it has moved backwards. There's no imminent threat of the government being overthrown, but the Taliban has gained momentum. Al-Qaeda has not reemerged in Afghanistan in the same numbers as before 9/11, but they retain their safe havens along the border. And our forces lack the full support they need to effectively train and partner with Afghan security forces and better secure the population. Our new commander in Afghanistan, General McChrystal, has reported that the security situation is more serious than he anticipated. In short, the status quo is not sustainable. As cadets, you volunteer for service during this time of danger. Some of you fought in Afghanistan. Some of you will deploy there. As your commander in chief, I owe you a mission that is clearly defined and worthy of your service. And that's why, after the Afghan voting was completed, I insisted on a thorough review of our strategy. Now, let me be clear. There has never been an option before me that called for troop deployments before 2010. So there has been no delay or denial of resources necessary for the conduct of the war during this review period. Instead, the review has allowed me to ask the hard questions and to explore all the different options, along with my national security team, our military and civilian leadership in Afghanistan, and our key partners. And given the stakes involved, I owed the American people and our troops no less. This review is now complete. And as Commander-in-Chief, I have determined that it is in our vital national interest to send an additional 30,000